each other's long, thin arms, stroking with green leafy fingers to whisper our coming, the air too soft to hold sound without breaking. The path plays with us, leading us to locked gates, set in an aged wall, hiding a kingdom, slumbering for a century, sieged by the forest forces, roots resounding through soil in a marching rhythm, and the moss front line crawling up the stone. Invader or savior? A breath and veil conform to my skin, and I am this close to brushing apart the opening to another older world. If I would just lie down and hold hands with the trees, twisting my limbs into the earth as I exhale one more time to release the last molecules from that place I would no longer remember.
Thank you, Brooke. That was lovely. She just said something beautiful to me on the way up. She said to me, her mum says that if somebody pronounces her surname correctly from reading it, they can't read. Isn't that lovely? Second up is Maria, or Mummy Harmony, as she's better known.
Horns for the hunting, which I couldn't use, but she actually wants to do a walk. She's 8 years old, and she's been going through a lot of cancer treatments and all the different stuff, and yeah, I thought it's actually quite appropriate to the time. So the title is All One. You are not alone. You are not alone. You are be now, aren't you? You are not alone. Alone. All one. When you are alone, you are. You are all one. Alone. All one. Holy yourself when your heart accepts the tune it plays with the wind. You are on your land, and there, light and dark shifts with movement of your thoughts, of your fire, fire within you, the sparkle in the dark. You are your daylight, you are your nightlight. In both you thrust sparkles of warmth, giving wings to yourself to fly. Fly in the light. Fly in the dark. Fly into the known. Fly within the unknown. meet the unknown in the dark, to give it your own light. Fly alone, knowing you are not alone. You are all one.
Yeah, I was just going to think that, because I'm not sure if there's anything you can do about the Oasis tribute back
outside. Yeah. I was trying to get your attention.
If anybody's struggling to sleep, I'm sure if you gave Maria a couple of bob, took her home, she'd read you to sleep, and it wouldn't take long, I'd imagine. Next up is Gillian Thomas. That's a compliment.
I just wrote this when I was peer pressured into reading it, not that I'm looking at anyone in particular, but this is about my grandparents' farm that's like smack dab in the middle of the United States in the state of Iowa. My grandparents' home is where the sky meets the land. From their farm, you can see the endless green fields of corn, embrace the bright sky that does not even know the word cloudy. There is a tire swing hanging from a 200-year-old tree. There is a tall silo I have only partway climbed up on dares from my cousins. My father is buried here. All my family is there. And there is even a plot for me in the family cemetery. There is a part of the country, or this is a part of the country, that is forgotten, but I like it that way. The nearest neighbors are more than a mile from here, and they are also somehow related to me. I have never spent more than a few weeks at a time here, but this place feels the most like home to me.
Pressure gets an awful bad name, but I'm so glad you pressurised her into reading that. That was lovely. Now, the next person on the open mic has elevated himself to rock star status. They only have one name, Megan.
I just wonder where you were going to rock star thing there for a second. So I had a really strange dream there last night. And the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just going to make an interesting poem. So this is called Transformation. And this is the dream I had last night. I had a dream last night that I was dying. Not that I was physically sick or anything. No, I was trying to die. So I woke up this morning not feeling quite right, because dreaming of dying is not something you take light. In this dream, three goodbye letters myself I did write with instructions and advice before I bid a good night. And I was trying to find a simple way to do it, one where I wouldn't feel much or wait more than a minute. I was advised to go to a breathing class in a pool where we held our breath underwater for a minute or two. Once I learned what to do, I had to hold it until my mind stopped thinking and my body was still. Nobody questioned my mission, just accepted it and let me go. It was just something I had to do. Now, before you all get scared of what this dream was trying to declare, I looked up its meaning, and it seems that dreaming of one's own death is something quite appealing, as it signifies a transformation. A transformation devoutly to be wished, it seems. Enough my mind decided to explore it in a dream. When I was researching this, there was two things I had to find. The first was why I was dreaming of trying to die, and the second was the cause of the attendant death and why. Upon researching why I dreamt of such a demise, I learned it was time for me to say my goodbyes to my old self and make room for the new, because sometimes it's just something you have to do. In order to emerge stronger than before, both physically, mentally and emotionally too, you must destroy what is left of the badness that's inside of you. This led me to question what exactly was I changing, and only two things came to mind: riding and roller skating. This time last year, I began my riding career. Not literally, of course, but I did start right here. And over the course of a few months to a year, I wrote a couple of poems that kicked me into gear. But recently, I've been struggling to write something new. I was looking for a sign, something of a breakthrough. And it wasn't for the lack of inspiration, but for the fear of living up to my own expectation. I did try write again, but with a touch of hesitation. When you write something great, there's a mix of feelings. The first are accomplishment and a sense of healing. The second comes much later, the sense of how can I write something as good or even greater than something people liked and I loved even more. You give yourself a pass so you won't try to write like before. Back in March, I played a game called roller derby. I don't remember how, but I fell and hurt my knee. I missed a couple of matches, maybe two or three. I couldn't train, but was still a coach of the new fresh meat. At first, I was afraid of how unfit I'd be, but then I had to focus on my own recovery. At one point, I thought, that's it, I'm done, I quit, until I remembered how fun it was to hit. Now, although I still can't skate until I'm fully fixed, I'm working on my nutrition and other bits of fitness. I'll return a beast and be thankful that I did. When I get back on skates, they'll be calling me the comeback kid. And after all this time, I thought all hope was lost. I guess I just had to realise it was I that was. Thank you.
If anybody knows how to put that window up, you might help me, because he's doing 12-inch extended versions of Oasis and stuff, and it's starting to wreck my head. Thanks, Megan. Actually, the whole idea of checking what your dreams mean is something I've done quite a lot. We can have a long conversation about that. And we might even include Ray Hanlon in it.
Very short one, it's for all the farmers out there in this lovely sunny weather. It's called Rain. Stern rods falling from the sky rend the delicate air to pieces. They themselves shatter on contact. They shed their being as a gift of life for thirsty greenery and parched soil.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much. Next up is Patricia Walsh.
Missing person. Clean as a guitar, flourish or otherwise. Busking for a better world, domination. Asking for little but company and a drink. Not much persuaded needed, going without saying. A ghost army of friends still moving forward. These neutral shoes make up supreme attire, once early centuries of the best mind. Slinking in on the priest's apiary. This undocumented hanger-on lingers still, listening no more to private tune. Once incarcerated, forgotten forever, we claw your way to your chosen pass. Are we really different? Let me count the ways. Witches in the night scavenge for a drink. This historic case is not yours anymore. Holding at peace with a number like a monkey. Dispense a whale into the laundry basket. An impotent scar stolen on the cruelty of strangers. Just as you are, defining a purpose. Sanctuary of your house no longer relevant. The cryptic dissociation, conscious decoupling. New histories terrorize guilty parties. Enduring love not opposite anymore. Potential past and present merged together. The scripted burn of pages well cherished. Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. I'm assuming it's not the rugby player, but next up is Brian O'Driscoll.
That never stops.
My apologies, Brian. It's such an obvious reference, isn't it? My apologies.
Cheers. Thank you. I was living in Dublin for 10 years, and the name Brian O'Driscoll destroys you. And it's like, why would you pretend? It's like, it's horrible. But then put writing poetry on top of that, and my father knew Brian's wife's mother, so he got a poem called Special Delivery, And he said, look, if I read poetry, I'd try and read yours. That's what you got to deal with rugby players. It's hard, but I think all of you kind of get that. And that's why coming to these kind of things interests me massively, because I never kind of... I was, like, as Greg had said about school, because I read a thing about his interview in the, was it the Examiner? And he was saying he'd been seen as an undiagnosed dyslexia, and, but you want to land the words like your father had done. You work in the print place, and I failed maths. In fact, I was struggling to pass maths. But there was something with the English, and I said, fuck, how can I not? Why do I have to land these words? But I have no visual, so I'm literally working off words, so it's frustrating. So you could write something and someone goes, that's unmatched. But then I come here and listen to what you're writing, and I'm like, fuck, man, this is never, you can't pick the words that's gonna outlast every other word. It's a dangerous level to put yourself at. And then to be as critical of yourself, of your writing, you're literally relying on everyone else. So it's odd, sorry. A bit deep, but it's a poetry reading. So there's three poems, and then, yeah, what else is it going to be? And they're often going to be detailed and with rhythm, hopefully, which is why Greg's had a kind of notice his use, lean on words, to bring something more to it. But then I'm also aware of over-rhyming, overusing the words, because people go, that's easily done. Then again, your poem, you rhymed beautifully. That's kind of rare, because you see some poems on TV and you're like, how is that on TV? But it's everyone's different perspective, which I'm learning. I'm literally mirroring everything. So the first one, it's not just the paints, but the weight of their dedicated dance. While the submerged canvas sets itself against the sweet subtle rays of the splaying sun, here an over-emotive artist stands to cuss the standard nature of his living, breathing dirge, and amuses the bones of her own crystal-clear champagne body, conscientious, incredibly pining for another perfect permittance of cantankerous art. The shape of the deteriorating studio seems to be set on decompose. A swollen composition of stolen moments lies deliriously deluded within, and then the divisive pair come credibly back together, whispering sweetly, neatly, nearly never received this momentous moment before. When essentially failing to fail became their favourite best thing, midst an array of tankless utensils which finally wished to giddily adhere to any of his screaming, scheming quotidians, begs for a sail inside of her immeasurable mind, please, building these tidal waves from deep beneath the bones of her borrowed being, a painterly piece of physical poetry emerges. All the while, shy-eyed, he smiles with calamitous candor and presses the weight of the relit cigarette inordinately against the weight of her magnificent lips which swell overhead to greet a defeated breath. Yes, he tends to resolve himself to like her, neat little wraparound wrinkles peppered by the periphery of the trivial eye. First one. I added the last thing, I knew I'd forget it. And the second one is called Sweet Reverie. I actually was getting so obsessed with the English language, I said, is there any way I can translate to French? And everyone said, man, what do you think of yourself? I was like, it wasn't that, it was just, I didn't know how the rhyme would work. And she said, look, you're spitting out synonyms here. Go on your own gut. So it's Sweet Reverie. A pianist, the author, and one want-away artist gathered to gain incredulous levels of unofficial artistry amidst dripping, written, keynote creation. One man's occasional thought is a second man's celebrated orchestration, whilst another roams the width of the room with the length of professional reach. When studied fingers intricately convene with a pair of pared-down singular weapons of mass demonstration, again against the other person's body of battling bones and nowhere else but far, elated to simply be here, acoustically adhering to every single part of every which way. And the scribe's audiovisual windfall suddenly begins to take spectacular shape. Perhaps just as if Heaney had said it himself. I saw that recently, there was a documentary on Heaney, and only 18 minutes was recorded, so my dad was like, recording poetry things? I was like, come on. But it was superb, and he mentioned Windfall, and whoever the poet was, and Theodore was saying, it's one of the best words ever, and I was like, how long? And that's been stuck in my head for 6 months since, what's the best word? I'm thinking cantankerous, I don't know why, I don't even know what it means, which is the worst word. So this is the last one, it's a little bit more full on, but it's a commissioned poem, because I would do them, and people often would come to me and go, if a restaurant wants a poem, they'll say, what are you going to do? And I'm kind of going, I actually don't know, so I'll have to meet you, but eventually we'll write it. Maybe they might be a customer in the restaurant with rhythm and they love it, they like it, the odd time tell me that was great, we like it. But you can always see when people, and me included, that they see reading it as a chore. And my mother would always say, stop saying that, because you see it. But in general, you know, you kind of, it can be, what's that? Yeah, sorry, you're right. What if her words could cut you like crystal clear? Snide eyes arise, ain't them bodies being some kind of saints again? Buried deeper still to fill their plain white blank canvases in. A secret of eulogy built out of nothing all that eerily strange anymore. Even if she stood grapples up beneath the healing undergrowth, begging themselves to artificially resurface poised purpose. Splinter nails, these navel gazing, thieving, ethereal people with attentive details resounding right by it, competitively listening earpieces. Okay to be dead, eager, and above all else, beneficially buried this time. If only for her bare naked baby, which lies vehemently within the overhead tragedy of the bristling breeze of the whistle stop trees, they wouldn't cry their crystal clear tears from so very far away. Simply grasping at an inescapably suggestive tumbleweeds, she feels a peace that he fails to feel. She feels all of me. There you go. Thank you very much.
So for years I used to say to people, everybody should have a favourite word. It amazes me that people have favourite TV programmes, favourite records, favourite football things, but very few people seem to have favourite words. Mine when I was growing up was distraught. And then when I got a bit older I realised what it meant, really meant, I thought I'd better change that. So that's no defenestration, which means, you know, can't mean throw yourself out the window, I think. But everyone should have a favourite word. Jerry Murphy, do you have a favourite word?
Jerry Murphy, come on.
Hi Jerry, it's more like hi Jerry. You know you want to.
Yeah. Show him the photograph.
You had it. This is it's on a chain poems. The first poem has been on to Greg Donati, the second one is mine, and the third one is Louis de Quervez. So if Greg remembers the CND phone number, the balloons, blue summer,
Simon McHugh.
Oh, same thing.
Same fucking thing. You know what? You're kicking the ball to me. I will not stop.
You will not stop.
We know anyway, each other too well.
This is called.
The Simon Queen is not the same as CLD.
You know.
I tried with my work for 5 years and I worked with CLD. You sure? But you wouldn't do fucking anything.
You're so good. You're good enough for both of us, aren't you? Anyway, this is called
True.
Bang. After Great Dante. Finally sold out, exhausted but happy, the balloon seller beans for breather on the roof of the car bomb.
I tell you what, it's interesting though, because we were here one night, I don't know if you remember this
one. We knew each other as children.
Right,
he's destroying my life. Will
somebody call a therapist for Greg Delante to help me? We were here one night, a number of people came up to the mic and said, I'm just going to read a short one. And then you came up after and said, you obviously don't know what a fucking short poem is. And read a 2-line poem. And that was it. I'll be just losing the run of this out here. No glasses, yeah. It's Anne Dalton. Our 5-word champion is next.
I thought I'd start off. I have 2 poems that I'm going to read, and they're both very different poems. But the first one is quite a mischievous poem, and it's I often kind of think of a lot of different lives, I suppose, that I've lived, all very different. And one period of my life was in London during the 90s, and during that time I studied reflexology. And part of that course is you'd have to learn the theory of the anatomy and physiology. and we had this one instructor, this lecturer, who was a dinger for all the muscles. He was a physiotherapist himself, but he was just obsessed with all the Latin names of the muscles. So of course we all had to learn these off, and this poem came out of it. It's just simply called The Muscle Poem. And it's not really as naughty as it sounds at all, do you know, but here we go anyway. Wrap your biceps around my trapezius. Lay your rectus abdominis close to mine. Pinch my gluteus maximus, and I'll blush every time. Flex your pectoralis major, and I'll open my orbicularis oris. Do something outrageous with those rhomboids, because their name suggests they should be included. Slide your flexor digitorum longus down my sacrospinalis, and my little erector pili will tremble should you stroke my adductor longus. But should you wish me to go any further, I can't continue the rest. I can't continue in muscular terms, because the names of the muscles they teach one at school, at Quasary, never cover the others. But I'm a clever girl. I can continue the rest in layman's terms, should you wish me to.
I've set you up.
So yeah, when I lived in London, I used to be described as the gentle poet from lyrical poet from County Cork. But you know, there was a lot of mischief in there. But this is, I suppose, one of those gentler ones that they would have referred to, and hasn't got a name yet, and still it is actually still in editing phase. But here we go. Last thing he did always was to put his hat on before leaving the house. Without his hat, he felt raw and exposed. Without the hook that held his hat, his whole life would be bobbing round on the water. That little hook held the pieces of his world together. He had fixed it to the wall with strength and precision. Nothing in his life would come undone. He had fixed a hook for her too, right beside his. But she was never one to wear hats. Instead, a long necklace with coloured glass beads hung there, one she liked the look of better on the hook. The beads seemed to him to move a little each time he took his hat to go. Movement, coming and going. He no longer had the answers. All he knew was that she was gone, and the beads still hung there. He needed them even more than his hat. I might have to drop the last letter.
Thanks, Anne. You know, you said that first poem isn't as dirty as it sounds.
Yeah.
That first poem can be as dirty as anybody listening wants it to be perfectly honest. Just the imagination.
I don't want
to name names, but I know there's a few people in the room got really dirty drawn, and I could see it. Well, let's not get
excited.
Charles, excited, yes. That's a much more polite way of putting it. Charles Carpenter. Yeah.
A few people who can remember James and Healy, who used to give a memorable performance as a bull in the cave in the field, to which I had to take some Australian relations of mine. They were frankly astonished. Luke, he also wrote a book called The Castles of County Cork, which is very informative, rather well done, etc. And I owe him just such amount of information. At Castle Dolmen, a square, emphatic, well-placed pile, north of Primer League, built in the time of Queen Elizabeth by Donal of the Hides, chieftain and trader who had something to protect. We are at Castle Donovan, my sports commentator nephew, Ken Brown, and I. In the lush green fields hard by, a grey pony lifts his... below the castle, on its rocky outcrop, a grey pony lifts his head and gazes. He would know us again. He had proprietary rights here now over Donal's knockabout castle.
Charles, now you just have to bear with me a moment while I explain something. Number 10 on the open mic list was Anne Dalton. Number 12 was Charles Clark. There was nobody at number 11, but Dor Harding had himself down as 11A. So I upgraded Charles from 12 to 11 so that Dor could actually be 11A. I have no idea why you made it 11A, Dor, but your next note. That's the way it works.
Jerry's story quite a bit, and the reason I'm retelling it is because I know he's not going to remember to retell it to Craig. In 1962, I was up in the graveyard in Beaumont, and there was a man cleaning the graveyard, and I was only 11 or 12, and he said that it's very important that we should respect the dead, and he was flippers, you know, what had it done, you know, what had the graveyard done. And he said people don't respect the dead anymore, and he said, I'm on the way up to Cars Hill in a minute, and he said, would you like to come with me? And I was with my brother and another chap, and we said, yeah, right. So we jumped into his taxi and we drove out there. And he said, see this cross, this big cross here? He said, I built that. And he said, I'll lay the electricity for it, and I have to pay the bill, but I can't pay it anymore, and they're going to cut me off shortly. And we got into the car and he drove us back home again. Imagine that happening these days. Billy Sorensen. And Greg comes along and writes a poem about it. Because I should have written the poem. Anyway, this poem is called The Circle. It's... at the start of the Renaissance, when Florence became the place to be for all the writers, one painter became kind of better than the rest, and word got to the Vatican that he should be summoned, and this is called a circle. A message came to Pope Benedict X concerning Giotto Bandone, probably from Dante Alighieri, who said, he is all the rage today. Benedict sent for a faithful emissary and said, bring Giotto to me. Eventually, arriving in Florence, the envoy found Giotto at work and worried of the stranger who requested a sign of his genius. Affronted, the artist took a pencil to his fist, deftly drew a perfectly round circle and said, take this to your excellency. Feeling ridiculed and taking umbrage, the messenger took the long road home. Back in Rome, the pontiff immediately perceived the depth of the simple sign and said, bring this man to me, we shall dine.
That cross is a... Do you want to go ahead? Okay, yeah, no, this time, just get so the next up is, it's Chris Hollis. He'll be that one right tonight. Are you going to read it or do you want me to read it? Okay, so, it's a first, as far as I'm aware of, it may not be a first, but it's the first. So Chris wants the poem read for him rather than him performing himself, so I'm going to read it for him. It's called Anna Lydia. Molly, yeah?
Can you say hang on?
Yeah.
Okay. Anna Olivia.
Is that the Oscar part of it?
What's that?
Is the the Osquaga part of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to let somebody else laugh to me because I don't have Osquaga, I'm rude to Osquaga. Anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't want to read it because I don't know that.
Yeah, well, I could do it, but I'd probably make a complete pig's ear of it, so.
Well, hopefully it's not too complicated.
No.
I have a handful of words, mantra and laughing.
Okay.
Okay.
Anne Olivia, from Ali.
Yeah.
In advance of the terrible beauty, a singularity, 900 rifles unloaded at Hoth. Home rule and war ahead, dispatched the King's own Scottish borderers, royal a seething crowd. Bird gods swarm in a hot cloud, rocks, bottles, myriad cries aloud. Bachelor's Walk, July 1914. Three civilians shot dead, Mary Duffy, James Brennan, Patrick Quinn. Erskine Childers ahead. Event horizon, Anne Olivia, our mother, pure black, whole, umbilical and navel, she abides. She waits, yet does not wait. Eyne emboldened, hot bloods navigate, great swells on ancient tides. Romans to Vikings, Normans to British, clan, colony, country, bird gods. Oyster catcher and mute swan spy, still from sheltering reed. A red-necked grebe feigns desultory drift, river, the witness soul. Drihith kunte valiochia, sheer hymn. Each span claims a bright, trebled voice. Rory O'Moore, Henry Grattan, James Joyce, Daniel O'Connell, Samuel Beckett, O'Donovan Rossa, Rosie Hackett, clever Liam Mellows, Sean O'Casey, Frank Sherwin, Isaac Butt, Sean Houston, Father Matthew, Matt Talbot, weeping, blind rhapsodes, sin, the brave old sing, sorry, weeping, blind rhapsodes, sing, the brave old song, sorry, O Roche the Bahawalia.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks, Chris. You were meant to come tonight, Anne. You were meant to come. Thanks a million for that. No, Mag's treat has arrived, so we've got a train for Mag's very quickly. Mag's bring us up to meet me and then close the lunch, please.
Very interested, my fingerprints burnt off and five words came up one night with five words and it was all in there percolating so I was scattered all over the page. And I think it just ties in with a short line of a piece of a song. Catch a world from hand to eye, steal one iris kiss of sun, blend within your camouflage, drink it up and sense it through. I won't give you the rest, only. The intima lava, Maranimshire, Thakata, is Mishig paint all in Ilona Halina. My fingerprints are growing back, retracing tracks to me. Identikit, a legal me to fit, a DNA rethread. Get your body repairs for free. I touch screen now and you light up, uncoded, euphoric, unlocked. Braille the specimen, it friction burns. Skin, release your tired knots. Thereabouts, true self-revealed, like a gangster finger, the one who grasped. I press it in the colour dye, fingerprint new futures from the past, in isobars and thermographics, cold front to cold font, in bold font, liquid lava lifelines, body demographics. My fingerprints are growing back, from seared, scorching pain, in Gucci 60s swirling lines. I swear I don't know myself again. Linte Malava, Ekshin Marlanta, Ik Hagen Chante, Ik Hirkel, Ishtik Donsa. So the words are fingerprint, legal, euphoric, specimen, and thereabouts. So.